This is Fellow Passengers, a sequel to Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, written and read by Sef, S-E-F. The rating is Jen. We begin with a quote from A Christmas Carol. Fred is speaking to Uncle Scrooge. Christmas time. The only time I know of, in the long calendar of the year, when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely, and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave, and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. Fellow Passengers, Stave 1. Scrooge was truly living, to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. Every old acquaintance, every passerby, had marveled at the new Ebenezer Scrooge. A jolly almsgiver, fulsome conversationalist, doting uncle, would-be godfather, and sometime man of business, never prone to lie abed even in the bleak depths of midwinter. He was lively as a country dance. True, at 80, his stiff limbs no longer sprang heedlessly into the morning.
"Creak knees, twang, you old back,"
he cajoled as he wobbled to his feet.
"It's Christmas Eve. We've no time for carping."
He thrust his feet into his slippers, wiggled his toes, and shuffled into the sitting room, stomping a little dance upon reaching the old armchair beside the hob.
"Well,"
he said gleefully, dropping into the chair, rubbing his hands, and speaking kindly to the wooden chair across from him.
"My dear Jacob, it is now 14 years precisely since your passing. 14 years, same as your namesake worked to earn Rachel's hand. And 7 years to the day since your haunting cracked me open and exposed my shriveled heart. You saved me, Jacob You saved me, Jacob Marley, execrable friend though I was, and with such a scarce hope for redemption."
No air stirred, no spectral figure moaned, though Marley had assured Scrooge long ago that he often sat invisible at the fire beside him.
"The angel of death has stayed his hand for these 7 years, that I might break some of the chains I forged, repent my sins, aid my fellow creatures, and share in their joys and sorrows. And I believe I have. If I have, that is down to you."
The painted Dutch tiles surrounding the fire glimmered, pricking at his conscience with their depictions of biblical saints and prophets and cloud-born messengers. After his reawakening, Scrooge's keenest regrets had been for the men and women he had failed, and the opportunities for happiness he had scorned. But now, in his dotage, his thoughts dwelt more often on the rickety imbalance of his present good fortune, weighed against a long life poorly lived. He felt most especially the injustice of Marley's eternal condemnation for lack of a true friend. Scrooge wheezed a cough and grabbed the poker to stir the slumbering embers.
"My fervent prayer, Jacob, is that my rescue has also lightened the burden you carry, that your purgatorial fetters have proven less immovable than you expressed." "Well..."
Scrooge braced himself rigidly upright and clenched the arms of his chair. "In honor of your remembrance day, of my rejuvenation, and of the blessed day itself, I will not visit your grave today. No, mind, I will not. I know you don't lie there. But I will grant a gift, in your name more than mine, to the family
whose service we made so burdensome. Today, Jacob, I will erase our names, and the firm of Scrooge and Marley will embrace the proprietorship of Cratchit and Sons. Do you not think that a worthy bequest? No answer sounded from the empty chair. How now? Scrooge asked, shaking his head ruefully. Did you ever think me a man of such fancy? I expect not, and doubtless the mice titter to hear me speak aloud to a contraption of wood. Have you become again a roving, restless traveler, my friend? Lonely witness to humanity's suffering? I hope not. I hope you have come to spend Christmas, Jacob, here in your home, with the soul you have saved. The room was silent, but for the soft crackle of the fire, the fall of ashes. Outside Scrooge's window, fog oozed like molasses from the narrow street into the courtyard, taking on luminous, ghostly forms shaped by the weak December sunlight. Despite the chill and the clinging darkness, cheery folk could be heard striding out, calling greetings, opening shops, gathering supplies, and preparing for the feast to come. Scrooge rose and dressed and grabbed the heavy, paper-wrapped, black-and-gold sign for which he had paid a pretty sum the week before. He stepped carefully down the wide staircase with his burden. At the door, he put down the package briefly to tug playfully at Marley's imagined pigtail behind the once animate door knocker. Satisfied with the completion of this daily ritual, he lifted the sign again with a huff and stepped out into the cold, slushy courtyard. There he found Bob Cratchit's youngest already on his doorstep, bouncing on his toes in unsuppressed excitement. "Tim, my boy," Scrooge said, delighted. "Aren't you a ready fellow? A Merry Christmas to you." "Merry Christmas, Mr. Scrooge. I wanted to see the surprise you promised me for today." Tim smiled shyly, tucked his hands in the pockets of his good woolen coat, and confided a secret. "I told Mother and Father I was off to the chapel to decorate the choir." Scrooge laughed and clapped him on the shoulder. "You shall be the first to see it, Tim, and I hope you shall see your father's face as well when he lays eyes on it." He placed the package in Tim's arms, noting, as he did, that it was nearly as long as Tim's wingspan. But Tim was steadier on his feet now than Scrooge himself. There was an accomplishment. "Well, let us do some light work at installation and then enjoy a hot drink before we hide away to startle your father." They slipped and slithered across the frosty paving stones and around the corner to the counting house, which Scrooge unlocked with alacrity. Tim placed the mysterious package on his father's desk, and Scrooge went in search of the sturdy wooden box he had hoarded for the morning's activity. "Here it is. We'll each lift aside, if you're able, my boy." "Oh, I can. Yesterday I carried a whole bucket of coal for Mother, and she said, 'Bless the doctor,' said Mr. Scrooge, 'I'll be a strong man by the time I'm 20. "And so you shall, pulling wagons by your teeth, I wager." Together they maneuvered the unwieldy box into the street and placed it squarely in front of the counting house window. Tim looked puzzled, but assisted Scrooge up onto the box without any question. Giddy with anticipation, Scrooge chortled at him and reached up to unhook the iron chains from which dangled the antique Scrooge and Marley sign, a banner which had been in place well before the birth of good Queen Victoria. The rusty chains squealed in protest. The first chain slipped only reluctantly from its hook. The other was more resistant, and when Scrooge tugged fiercely at it, the hook suddenly pulled free from the rotting beam above. Scrooge toppled backward, arms flailing. The casket beneath him slid across the icy walk, and he heard a dolorous cry. The door to the counting house burst open, and the ghost of Jacob Marley emerged, dragging his ponderous chain, just as the bell of the neighboring church began to toll the hour. "Jacob!" Scrooge wheezed. He was dimly aware that Tim Cratchit was hopping about, speaking frantically to him. But it was Tim who seemed distant and muffled, not Marley. The bit of chain still clasped in Scrooge's hand was extending itself, tendrils squeezing around his chest and twisting down his leg like a choking vine. Fiery pain accompanied it. Marley moaned and struggled with obvious effort against the chain around his waist, iron padlocks and cash boxes clanking. A strange wind, conjured in some distant clime, whipped his hair into violent contortions and flattened his cheeks. His jaw strained back and forth against the winding sheet that held it in place, and his wild eyes fixed on some point beyond the quickly gathering crowd. Pain-racked and terrified, Scrooge could manage only a hoarse whisper. "Jacob, am I to join you this very day?" Marley stretched out his arms and legs, crying wordlessly, his fingers clutching fruitlessly at the air, his heavy accoutrement jangling behind him as if lashed to a whip. Some dread force tugged at his shackles, pulling him relentlessly up and away from Scrooge. Marley rolled his head side to side in pointless agitation. Scrooge squinted up and realized with a sick jolt that he was viewing the dark eaves above him through Jacob Marley's translucent waistcoat and tights, which were themselves dissolving into nothingness, exposing scrawny ribs and withered flanks and twisted feet that were blasted away in turn by the ghostly wind. When the gale ripped the cloth around his jaw into shreds, Marley had only the space of a moment left for speech. "Thank you," he moaned, and his eyes rolled backward before the end. "It is enough." The tatters of Jacob Marley disappeared, merging in a stuttering last puff with the fog and the smoke of the wintry morning. The chain around Scrooge's leg tightened unbearably. His breath was sucked from his lungs by the phantom vortex, and his vision faded into a spine-chilling darkness. Stave 2. When Scrooge awoke, it was so dark that he very much feared he had indeed made the transit to the underworld. Surely that was a devil badger pulling and chomping at his right leg, bent on dragging him underground for leisurely consumption. He screwed his eyes shut, shuddered, and moaned in agony. Yet the awful gnawing was inescapable, as some dreadfully heavy apparatus clamped his limb in place. Was that his own pirated cashbox, a treasure chest, rightly crushing him with the weight of his shameful plunder? Scrooge cracked one eyelid open. Although he had neither the strength nor the will to rise, his head, like Marley's, seemed to float perilously free from his body. Puzzled by this weird sensation, he cautiously opened both eyes and was shocked to find himself swaddled in bed, ensconced within the dark shelter of his own bed curtains. The creature biting at Scrooge's leg resumed its work. "Ha, ha, ha," he spluttered and gasped aloud in pain. "Jacob!" The curtains of his bed were drawn aside by a hand. "Mr. Scrooge, oh, Dear Mr. Scrooge. Bob Cratchit's long face, which Scrooge might have declared white as a ghost, had he not an unwelcome familiarity with such spirits, loomed anxiously over him. Thankfully, it was a solid cranium, topped by tousled brown locks and supported by a strong neck wrapped in colorful wool. It seemed not at all likely to evaporate into mist. "How are you, sir?"
"Glad to see you," Scrooge croaked. He had expected a rather different spirit.
"Bless you. Tim, Fred, come look. Mr. Scrooge is awake."
"Mr. Scrooge!"
Tim clung tearfully to the bed curtain, his face pale and anxious.
"Oh, Mr. Scrooge, I thought you were dead."
"You frightened us all, Uncle," dear Fred said, patting a hand on Tim's shoulder as Bob drew his son near. "You have cracked your noggin and broken your leg, I regret to inform. But the good doctor assures us you shall see another Christmas with us. It will be a quiet one, but we shall do our best to make it comfortable." Bob swiped a sleeve across his eyes and pulled in a shaky breath.
"You should not have done it, sir. There was no need. You've given us so much. I cannot begin to... And why? Why not Fred?"
Fred scoffed and smiled at Scrooge. "I have explained it to him, Uncle, but the events of the day have put it out of his head. I am sorry your glorious gift has had such an unfortunate presentation. In a day or so, both Bob's head and yours shall stop spinning." Scrooge shook that head and regretted immediately his failure to heed his nephew's warning. The room spun around him.
"The gift is not from me, Bob," he insisted nevertheless. "From Marley." "You must know that. Believe it. From Marley."
Oh, even the simple production of words sent waves of torment from his head to his toes. Bob exchanged a questioning glance with Scrooge's nephew. Fred lifted one shoulder in an amused shrug. "You and Tim ought to be home this night, Bob. I'll sit with Uncle tonight and see that he takes his medicine. Have no worries. My beloved has promised to bring us dinner and cheer before the day is out."
"I want to stay," Tim said. "Please, Father, let me stay and sing carols for Mr. Scrooge. You know how he loves that. Please, please."
He threw his arms around his father's neck.
"Oh, Tim,"
Bob threaded his fingers through the soft hair at Tim's nape, "your mother and sisters will bemoan your empty place at the table. We ought all to be together on Christmas Eve." The disquieting image of an empty chair made Scrooge shiver. He tried to speak, choked, and sputtered softly.
"Home, dear boy. Go."
"I'll be home for bed.
Please, Father."
Fred eyed Bob sympathetically as he considered Tim's heartfelt entreaties. Doubtless, Bob felt obligated to do anything possible to ease his uncle's suffering. "My wife will surely be happy to transport Tim home in her carriage before the hour becomes too late, if that's a comfort to you, Bob. I'll remain with Uncle and sleep in the armchair by the fire." Bob sighed, nodded reluctantly, and kissed Tim's forehead. "Very well, Tim. Sing your sweetest and come home to us soon." He straightened, shook Fred's hand, and bade Scrooge farewell. "Sleep soundly, sir, and
when you are improved, all the Cratchits shall visit to express our gratitude." Scrooge still harbored some fear that he would not outlive the night. "Fred has the papers you may need," he assured Bob. "God bless you all." Stave 3. Awaking in the middle of a prodigiously tough snore, Scrooge heard Tim conclude his song with a joyful whoop. "On Christmas Day in the morning." He rolled his head on the pillow and produced a drooly smile. "Oh, Tim, that tincture of laudanum does numb the mind as well as the body. I am sorry to have missed your song." "I have more," Tim said, settling cautiously onto the edge of the bed. "I saved all the angel carols for your awakening because I love them best." "Do you, my boy? Why is that?" "Well..." Fred and his wife could be heard talking softly in the next room, so Tim's voice dropped to a conspiratorial whisper. "You will laugh, but I saw the angels on Christmas Eve when I was small. They soothed my pain, sprinkled incense on me, and assured me that I would soon arise and be well." He ducked his head and smiled to himself. "And when I woke up the next morning, Mother and Martha were twirling around the oven like dervishes, and Father and the rest were making music with spoons and pans and shouting because the turkey that could feed 1,000. "Laugh at you? Never." Indeed, Scrooge wept to hear this account. How well he recalled his plea to Marley for comfort, only to be denied and told that comfort comes from other regions and is conveyed by other ministers to other kinds of men. Everything Jacob Marley had told him was true. His ghosts had been angels to Tim. "I know these spirits, Tim," he assured. "Their brothers visited me that same Christmas Eve. Marley sent them to open my shut-up heart and my willfully blind eyes before I entered my grave as one of the eternally condemned." "You saw them?" Tim's eyes were wide. "God's truth, Tim." Scrooge scrabbled for the boy's hand and squeezed it gently. "They showed me how callously I had turned away from suffering, how wretchedly I had treated others, how foolishly I had rejected every human connection. Marley saw my impending fate and sent those spirits to reform me." Tim pulled at his upper lip and pondered this seriously. "I thought God had sent them," he confessed. "I never knew Mr. Marley." Scrooge chuckled. "He was my business partner in life, scheming and cold as myself. But he was my redeemer in death. So I wanted to settle his debt today. But now I have erased him, Tim, with the gift to your father. And he thanked me for it." Tim eyed him quizzically, not understanding Scrooge's reasoning. "But why?" Scrooge rested for a moment, gathering the energy for a speech. "This morning, when I unchained our names, he appeared, wearing the terrible shackles I'd hoped that heaven would strike from him.
but instead some unseen hand dragged him away, and he dissolved into a vapor. My friend is wiped away forever.
His grief for a long dead man was deep and excessive.
I was weighed down with iron when I was a child, Tim offered up.
I think perhaps you freed him from suffering, Mr. Scrooge.
A stingy gift when I owed him so much more, Scrooge said.
Oh, his leg, his head.
He knew true suffering now.
Jacob gave me a chance at heaven, and he earned only erasure.
A long, quiet remembrance followed. Then Tim began to sing his angel songs. The First Noel, Angels from the Realms of Glory, Hark, the Herald Angels Sing, and It Came Upon a Midnight Clear. And to Scrooge it was as if he in solemn stillness lay to hear the angels sing. Tears ran down his cheeks unashamed, and he did not brush them away. As the last note faded, Fred and his dimpled wife parted the bed curtains, and she pressed a kiss to Tim's head.
"That was quite angelic, Tim," she said. "Your voice is ethereal."
"Truly celestial," Fred agreed. "But it's time to take you home now. Your family will be missing you, and Uncle needs some of that heavenly sleep."
"Yes," Scrooge agreed muzzily. "Home, Tim."
Tim slid off the bed.
"Good night, Mr. Scrooge."
He thrust his arms into his coat as Fred held it for him. Before departing, he leaned close and whispered,
"Perhaps that unseen hand was an angel, Mr. Scrooge, raising Mr. Marley up to heaven.
Abraham didn't recognize his angel visitors, you know.
And Mary didn't even recognize the risen Lord when first she saw him."
Scrooge chuckled softly as he drifted into slumber.
"I hope you're right, Tim. Like the shepherds you sing about, angels make me sore afraid."
"Don't be afraid. They'll look after you."
"So will we. I promise, Mr. Scrooge."
Stave 4. Tim was better than his word. Scrooge did survive that night, and many others that were less fraught by pain and grief. He puzzled often over the mystery of Marley's end. Why must a person's ledger be tallied when breath ceased? Marley, though dead, had saved him. And Jesus, Tim reminded him, had descended into hell to save lost sinners. How could heaven be a dream when hell was so undeniably real? Scrooge's leg never fully healed, a fact he attributed to the remaining chains and locks that bound him, demanding further reformation. He had learned gratitude and generosity. In his latter days, he learned patience and humility. At his request, Belinda Cratchit attached the bit of chain that had caused his fall across the toe of his right boot. With every limp, Scrooge was reminded of his responsibility for Tim's near death, and all the other personal debts he still owed. He no longer spoke to the ghost of Marley as if to the living,
but went out into the world to confer daily with his fellow passengers to the grave. And so Scrooge's altered life adjusted itself further to infirmity and retirement from matters of business. And though each step was an ache, he merely muttered, "Bah!" and credited himself with, at least, having joined in sympathy with the true suffering of mankind. What he had left of riches he shared with the needy, and he engraved in memory the names and addresses of the cold and cruel persons he encountered on his forays into the world, so that in his own purgatory he might model Marley's gift to him. When Scrooge passed, it was not on Christmas Eve in his lonely apartment, but in the comfortable abode of his nephew, surrounded by family and friends, and if he renewed his acquaintance with the Angel of Death on that occasion, it was apparent by his last trembling smile that he was not much afraid. End.